Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on today's programme.
If I'm returned as mayor for a second term, I will continue what I started and what I did, which is what I said I would do during the first 4 years.
The mayoralty of Toronto is not a symbolic or a powerless position, as John Tory would like to have you believe. It is a leadership position.
This week we have a special edition of the programme for you, devoted entirely to the mayoral election that takes place next week in Toronto. As North America's fourth largest urban centre, which is among the region's fastest growing cities, any mayoral race here is arguably an election of consequence. But this year's race feels different. While the tone of city politics in Toronto has cooled since the chaos of the Rob Ford years, it's lately been roiled by Ford's brother, Doug, a former city councillor and the recently elected Premier of Ontario. He seems intent on meddling in the city's affairs more acutely, according to some, than his brother did while he was actually in charge of City Hall. That's all coming up right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. So welcome to this week's programme. And before we meet the candidates, let's cross over to Toronto and catch up with our bureau chief in the city, Thomas Lewis. Thomas, tell us first of all, what's at stake in this election?
Well, this campaign so far, Andrew, has been a slightly unusual one. A few weeks ago, we had perhaps the most dramatic twist that any mayoral election here has had for quite some time. And as you mentioned in your introduction, Doug Ford, who is the provincial premier of the province of Ontario, he has set out to really sort of involve himself in city politics in Toronto itself more acutely than any of his predecessors, I think it's fair to say. And he decided that he was going to cut the number of councillors in the middle of this election campaign almost in half, from 47 to 25. That caused a huge sort of legal battle, a huge political fallout too. But effectively, Doug Ford has won the day. So what we've had now, in the middle of an election campaign, the number of candidates, the number of councillors running in the number of constituencies basically fell by half. So now you have this kind of big mix of former constituencies, former political allegiances, all mixed into sort of rather huge kind of super wards, really. Each councillor, when they're elected, will now be representing, I think, around 110,000 people each, which is quite an extraordinary number, I think.
Well, the incumbent is John Tory. What do we know about this man?
John Tory has quite a traditional CV for a mayor, I think. You know, he was a businessman, worked in the legal profession, was a broadcaster for a time as well, and a political strategist too. So in many ways, I think he was sort of a return to the order of what Toronto's mayors had been in the past when he was elected 4 years ago. I think in the run-up to this year's election, he was seen as something of a shoo-in for a second term. He is quite a traditional mayor in that score. At the moment, it looks like he will win a second term. But I think this campaign has raised some questions about the kind of mayoralty that Toronto should have and wants to have in the years to come.
Well, let's hear your interview with him.
Well, it's been a highly unusual campaign, both because it's much shorter than in previous times. I mean, in previous times, they ran on for 10 months. This time it was only, and I put only in quotation marks, only 5 months, but then also interrupted by a great deal of fuss and bother about an arbitrary change to the size of the city council imposed by the Ontario government in the middle of the election. So that sort of took all the oxygen away for a while. But otherwise it's been, I mean, I've tried to run a very positive campaign. I'm the incumbent. You would expect me to run a positive campaign, and that's what I've done. And I think people have responded positively to the positive campaign, but we'll know for sure on election day.
There seems to me to be a sort of growing conversation around a gulf that seems to be widening in terms of equality in the city. So the people at the either end of the spectrum you just alluded to, how concerned are you about that? You were talking about the years to come and addressing, say, people being allowed to sort of get into the workplace to fulfill their potentials and to contribute fully. Do you also feel as though you've done enough to sort of, you know, maybe stem the sort of growing of that gulf in your first 4 years at City Hall?
I think we've taken some major steps, and, you know, without getting too granular, I could say that, for example, we have done things like have kids ride free 12 and under on the transit system. We've brought in a low-income fare pass for the transit system. We've started to meet, for the first time in many years, our affordable housing targets. But is that enough? No, it's not. And I think we have to do more. And it isn't all about granular things like that, actual sort of services or affordability measures. It's about finding ways to make sure that opportunity and people living in some of those more marginalized neighborhoods are hooked up to each other. So when we see in 1 week, which was an incredible week just a week ago, Microsoft, Uber, Intel, and a Canadian company called Shopify, which is quite well known globally now, all announced a total of $1.4 billion of investment in Toronto and hundreds of new jobs. The challenge is going to be to make sure that some of the people in those more marginalized neighborhoods hear something about those jobs and have access, because in many cases, there's no trouble with their level of education. They've gone to school and done what they were suggested they should do in terms of their careers and so on, but they just don't have the same tie-in to opportunity. And so that's the challenge. And that's one that does not per se involve a government program as much as it involves a kind of a all hands on deck commitment to say we're going to make sure we hook those people up to those opportunities so that they're included as well. So there's much more to be done, but I think we've had a good solid start on some of the things we've done over the past 4 years, knowing all these problems are things that take time to address.
Another thing that's taken time to address is the public transport network here in Toronto. I believe when it was sort of first established, or when the second subway line opened, it was feted around the world as one of the best and most integrated city transport networks anywhere. It's quite a different picture now, and it seems to be a topic of conversation, as it maybe is in any big city, to residents here. Again, sort of have you done enough question, I guess, on meeting the demands on a pretty stretched transport network as this city grows so quickly. And I guess there's a sense that transport is becoming a bit of a political football between the provincial level and the city level potentially. How worried are you at that it'll sort of hold things back effectively?
Under my leadership, for the first time ever, not just the last 5 years or 20 years, we have a comprehensive transit plan that is really making up for those decades that I made reference to where we haven't built anything. And so we have a comprehensive higher order transit, which is a number of projects that are all proceeding at the same time. And they are all at different stages now where they're actually underway. And so that's a great positive. And I think the provincial government, the new one, will see that it's not going to be wise to start taking that plan apart and trying to put it back together, because that leads to what we've always done in Toronto over the last 30 years, long before I was at City Hall, which is, you know, have a plan and then sort of review it, renew it, redebate it, restudy it, and not actually build anything. And I think the fundamental problem we had is that we didn't build anything, maybe one project at a time for, you know, 30 years. And you then fall behind other great cities that just kept building and building and building. So on my own report card, I would say on restoring service, on the day-to-day service that we're restoring that people are experiencing today, I have restored all kinds of service that was cut by my predecessor, 60 bus routes and these, you know, but a big restoration of service. We've invested a record amount each year by way of additional investment in the Toronto Transit Commission. And we've begun the biggest building program ever pursuant to that transit plan. So to me, I think what we've done is everything you could be reasonably expected to have done, in addition to some of the measures that have helped transit riders. They may be customary in other cities, but they weren't here. We just introduced a month or so ago, and it's getting rave reviews, a hop-on, hop-off transfer. We didn't have one. You know, so you can get on or off the system for 2 hours as many times as you want and only pay once. And these are things we haven't had that are meant to encourage transit ridership, help people that have lower incomes, help business. So I think we've done a lot, and it's quite a long list when you look at it. Is it ever enough? You know, maybe not. But the bottom line is I think we've done an awful lot, and I think people are going to recognize that and will vote accordingly next week. We've got a job to be finished here, and the key is not to get distracted and pushed off course or sent backwards, even worse. It's to get on with the plan.
Well, that was Mayor John Tory there. Thomas, you hinted that Doug Ford has been the elephant in the room in this election, or do you say a moose in the house in Canada? I'm not quite sure.
Now, either or.
Okay. You have a nice colleague there in Toronto in the Bureau, Will Kitchens. You've given him a task. Tell us what we're about to hear.
Well, yes, as you say, elephant in the room, moose in the house, whatever it is. Doug Ford is certainly all of those things. Will Kitchens, now my colleague here in Toronto, as you mentioned, Andrew, he's taken a look at Doug Ford, who maybe has among one of the highest name recognitions, along with his family and his late brother Rob, who was mayor, of course, of Toronto. Will has now got this report on who Doug Ford is and what impact he might have on the election next week.
My friends, this victory belongs to you. This victory belongs to the people. And tonight, the people of Ontario have spoken.
When Doug Ford won a landslide election for Ontario's premiership in June, it marked the most populist provincial government Canada's seen in its recent history. To critics, Ford's campaign was always a half-baked one. Ford never released a fully costed platform, and instead relied on slamming the inefficiencies of the deeply unpopular incumbent government headed by Kathleen Wynne. Ford also promised to cut taxes, gas prices, and axe carbon pricing schemes. And while he's taken heat for statements on immigration and refugees, on the whole, Doug's brand of populism hasn't played into the same type of anti-immigration rhetoric thrown around by other global populists. Instead, Ford's social conservatism has actually appealed to large swathes of the city's immigrants. But nonetheless, Ford is unabashedly a populist. His campaign even promised the return of Buck a Beer, a policy that would lower the price of a single bottle of beer to $1.
Ontario, the day you've been waiting for is finally here. We're bringing back a Buck a Beer to Ontario.
While the provincial race was expected to be a tight one, Ford's resounding majority government marked the culmination of a rapid and unexpected ascent to the top post in Canada's largest province. Previously a city councillor, Ford sat inside Toronto's modernist City Hall alongside his late brother Rob, Toronto's former mayor who became infamous for a highly publicized crack cocaine scandal while in office. The pair were as divisive among city councillors as they were Toronto residents. And from the outset of Doug Ford's premiership, he's been eager to meddle in the city's affairs. And Ford's critics suspect he has a bone to pick with his former City Hall colleagues. In late July, Ford announced he would cut the city's council from 47 to 25 councillors, declaring the move a necessary one for improving the efficiency of Toronto's City Hall.
My friends, it is clear that the size of government is just too large. This is particularly true at the municipal level.
Critics, like Andrea Horvath, the leader of the left-leaning New Democratic Party, raise fears that the cut would gerrymander the city's wards or constituencies, all in an effort to dent the support of Ford's opponents.
He didn't campaign on this move. And of course, we all know why. Mr. Ford is trying to rig the City of Toronto elections to consolidate power in his own office.
Most brazenly, Ford's council cut took place in the middle of the city's municipal election campaign. Candidates had already begun hitting the pavement in search of re-election, and an Ontario court responded by quickly declaring the move unconstitutional. Ford replied by becoming the first Ontario premier to ever invoke something called the Notwithstanding Clause, a rarely used constitutional provision that allows an elected official to overrule a court's decision. The move prompted protesters to descend upon provincial parliament and saw scores of opposing politicians escorted from the same building.
Member for Essex, please come forward. The House will come to order so I can deal with this.
Can the minister tell us how much Ontarians will be on the hook fighting court challenges caused by this dictator-like plot?
In Doug Ford's young three-month premiership, he's repealed a modernized sex education curriculum in favor of an antiquated 1998 version that ignores topics like same-sex marriages. He's been quick to roll back the province's environmental protections while also canceling a minimum wage increase. To many in Toronto's liberal-leaning city center, Ford's leadership represents a profound step backwards. And what it's done is highlight the ever-present gulf between the Toronto city center and its suburbs, a divide that's proved potent in every municipal election since 1998, when the city's six municipalities were combined into one. Come the 22nd of October, when Torontonians head to the polls, only 25 councillors will be elected to City Hall thanks to Doug Ford. And with Ford proposing plans like taking control of the city's public transit, his shadow is set to loom large over the city's politics deep into the future. For Monocle, in Toronto, I'm Will Kitchens.
John Tory was, until a few months ago, seen as something of a shoo-in. But then, earlier this summer, a hugely popular figure entered the race. And that figure is Jennifer Keesmaat, who we've met here on The Urbanist before. Thomas, who is this stalking horse? Who is this pretender to the throne?
So she is Toronto's former chief city planner, and I think she achieved something quite rare for a city planner at a city hall, in that she managed to elevate the role to something near a sort of rock star status of popularity among lots of voters here in Toronto. She's a very charismatic person, and she is someone who really does have an ability to connect to younger voters who find in her this kind of excitement that a city as large as Toronto really should kind of embody.
Well, you met Jennifer a little earlier on. Let's hear what Jennifer Keesmaat had to say.
Well, I've had the great pleasure over my career of being a city builder. I'm a city planner. I was the chief planner here, so I've always had my elbows in the mud in terms of getting things done in the city. And one of the big challenges that we face in the city of Toronto is our commute times. We're in some ways a typical sprawling North American city, and we've been growing very quickly, but we have not been building the transit infrastructure that we need. So, of course, inevitably, what's happened, a tremendous amount of congestion, both on our roads, but also within our transit system. So on the one hand, almost 30 years ago, 40 years ago, we had a very progressive transit system, in part because we linked together buses, subways, and streetcars with a single fare. We were a leader at one time, but we then started building highways, ringing the city region with highways, and we stopped building transit, and now we have this incredible traffic congestion problem. So really, this is a question about a green city. It's a question about a livable city. It's a question about whether or not people will be able to live close to where they work.
And how has that plan been resonating with voters as you've been on the campaign trail? Has that sparked kind of an excitement for the political process when I suppose a lot of people feel slightly beaten down by the politics of the moment at a provincial level, maybe elsewhere around the world too?
The thing that I've discovered on the campaign trail in every corner of this city is that in bringing forward a real transit plan and saying to people, look, this isn't a four-year plan, this is a 30-year plan, and we need to change the way we're approaching transit planning, and we need to be building out multiple projects at one time in our city to fill all of the gaps in the network, people start to get excited about that because it resonates with them that that's the right thing to do. People are tired of being sold a bill of goods. So the mayor that we have today came forward 4 years ago. He put it on his line signs, this plan that was called Smart Track. And there was this whole big brouhaha about how this would transform it. He actually even said it earlier today that Smart Track would transform transport in the city. And that plan hasn't materialized. It's a very, very watered down, almost to the point where it's not really recognizable version of what he promised. And I think that is disheartening to people, which is why there's been such a positive response to people hearing, hey, wait a minute, this is a real transit plan. It's a long-term plan. It's based on expert analysis and ensuring that we're delivering the right infrastructure, meaning subway, streetcar, or LRT, in the right part of the city, and it'll be an integrated network. People get pretty excited about that because they're kind of sick of this game playing.
I suppose every election is kind of an important election, whatever election that kind of is. I've been here for 3 years. I've seen the city change just as a resident here in really dramatic ways in that time. I think it feels quite different for a city of the size of Toronto to still be so up for grabs in so many ways. I think it's more than 52% of the people who live here aren't from here. That creates in itself kind of a really pretty interesting urban environment. For you, does this feel like a politically significant sort of moment for the city? And for example, with kind of the politics happening at a provincial level, is there a risk that at this really crucial moment, Toronto might be kind of hamstrung by those within effectively? How important is this vote this year, do you think?
Well, this is an absolutely critical vote. And the risk is that the narrative is that everything's okay, the status quo is okay. But we have a crisis of pedestrian deaths in this city. And that has come about as a result of the current approach to focusing on moving cars. We have a 1950s highway that is crumbling, an expressway, that our current mayor is proposing to spend $1 billion tearing down and rebuilding right on prime waterfront land. That is about the status quo. It's about an old idea of the city. And the question is whether we're going to move this city into the 21st century and focus on being a green city, on creating the kinds of spaces and places where people can live close to where they work. The fact that commute times have gotten so much worse in just a four-year period demonstrates that we're on the wrong trajectory. Imagine another 4 years. We became the most expensive city in Canada in which to rent. This is actually a little bit mind-boggling. We used to point our fingers in Toronto, sort of gleefully at Vancouver, and say, ooh, Vancouver's so expensive. Thank God we're not them. And in the past 4 years, we've become the unenviable city where young people are saying 94% of young people in this city, as surveyed by the Toronto Real Estate Board, are thinking about leaving the city for a very simple reason. They can't afford the rent. The city has become too expensive. So from my perspective, another 4 years of this could be devastating for the city. It could be devastating for our employment growth, for our prosperity, but also for families and communities. People want to stay and live in the neighborhoods close to where they grew up or in the city that they love. And right now, a lot of people are feeling that slip away. Like, it's just not a possibility.
Well, that was Jennifer Keesmaat there. And I know from Thomas that the issue of adding some excitement to the city and thinking of new projects is also vital in the campaigns. Thomas, you went to one of those projects, the Bentway, and you met two interesting people. Just tell us what this is and who the two people are we're going to hear now who you went to meet at that project.
The Bentway is undoubtedly the most interesting, I think, public space project in Toronto to have opened in many years. It's the transformation of the underbelly of the Gardiner Expressway, which is the main road thoroughfare that comes into the city of Toronto. It's long been accused of slicing off the city from the shoreline, so this is now transforming the underbelly of that into a series of public parks, the first stage of which opened this summer. So I went to meet there Sean McAuliffe, who is the author of a book on the mayor election here 4 years ago, Toronto, City on the Verge of Greatness. He's an urbanist and a teacher. And also Shauna Braille, she's an urbanist at the University of Toronto. And I went to the Bentway to ask them about how urban affairs would affect this year's mayoral race.
Toronto's a success story. If you come as a visitor to Toronto, you are struck. I'm struck every time I come back from being away, even a day, at the impressive skyline and all the cranes in the sky and the amount of wealth and prosperity in the city. And it's easy to be seduced into that, that it's like that for everyone, especially in the more central, politically engaged, socially, culturally rich areas. But there's an awful lot of Toronto that's left out of it. So I think that has the real potential to topple the success story and send it going backwards. It's a harder one to get your head around, because if it doesn't affect you personally, if you're doing okay, it's really easy not to see it, especially if you're distracted. But that's the kind of thing that can take a city down.
There has been an effort in particular this year to create new opportunities for engagement and for learning about who the candidates are that are very accessible. So for instance, the Toronto Public Library has a website called Know Your Vote. And on that website, that you can put in your address, or if you don't want to put your own address, you can put your neighbor's in, and it'll tell you what ward you're in and who the candidates are. And each of the candidates have been asked to fill out a survey, and you can look at the survey to see what their responses are and where you align. And there's another initiative called Vote Compass, which actually is more like you answer some questions and you tell it where you live, and it tells you who in your ward has sort of ideas and perspectives that most best align with what you already think.
Election Tinder.
Yes, I wasn't so crazy about Election Tinder. I preferred the one where I got to make the choice for myself.
We have been battling with the traffic here, but we are in a pretty sort of amazing space, I think it's fair to say. It's one of, if not the newest, public space in Toronto. We're in the underbelly of the Gardiner Expressway, which is one of the main roadways into the city. What does this kind of project, the Bentway, given that it was a project that seemed to be a partnership between City Hall and lots of engaged kind of other stakeholders too, are projects like this a sign of things to come and an effective marker, I guess, of the kind of city Toronto would like to be coming forward? Or might this election slow things down slightly?
I certainly hope that the Bentway is a sign of more things like this to come. Whenever I come down here, and I haven't been here very often, but a few times, I always just burst with pride for Toronto and what we can do when we work in partnerships, because the Bentway actually was developed as a result of a philanthropic donation and a partnership between the city and the setting up of a conservancy to run the park here. And it's also really a novel way to think about what do we do with our built infrastructure that actually is really quite ugly and maybe not all that contemporary, but now we've turned it into this really wonderful, fresh, exciting place. And so I hope that we see more and more of that in Toronto.
And there are some other spaces like these, like really contemporary, nice, interesting public spaces. But like this one was a philanthropic donation of, I think, $25 million to get this thing going. Other parks that are similar to this tend to come from condo development fees. There's a bit that goes to public amenity, and that only happens in certain parts of the city. That doesn't happen in parts of the suburbs that don't have any development or inner suburbs. So I think that gets to one of the great tensions of Toronto, that we really like this stuff, we're proud of it, but one of the biggest issues that the mayor is running on right now is keeping taxes low. Toronto has this desire to be a great city, but doesn't want to pay for it.
So just a final thought from each of you, therefore, whatever happens come election day, what are Toronto's prospects from your vantage point as watchers of the urban life of this city? What's in store for Toronto, would you say?
Toronto's had tough times before, and the thing I think that's kept it together is the people that live here. It's always had a strong civil society and just interesting people flocking here. People are not stopping coming here because they don't like the municipal politics or because of what happened in the summer with the anti-democratic attack. People are still coming here. So that's going to keep feeding the city with new energy. So there's a momentum in Toronto that all big cities like it have that I think will roll on. Whether everyone is on board that momentum or not is the hard part that we got to fix.
So a couple of things I would just mention. The first is that it's 20 years now since the City of Toronto and the boroughs were amalgamated, right? And we still talk about the old City of Toronto and its inner suburbs. I still sometimes edit reports where they're talking about the old City of Toronto, and I'm saying it's 20 years on, let's just call it the City of Toronto. And so when we talk about it in that narrative, we contribute to the narrative too. Not to say that differences don't exist, but I do think that there are most certainly a lot of areas in common and a lot of things that regardless of where you live, that you care about. You care about your safety on the street, right? You care about your ability to be able to go from home to work to the grocery store in a reasonable amount of time and in a way that suits your lifestyle and the choices that you made. In terms of if we look at cities and city growth, Toronto is a city that is growing, but you're right. In fact, actually, the outer suburbs that aren't part of the political boundaries of the city are growing at a far faster rate than the city itself is. And that's common throughout Canada and throughout North America, in fact. So while we have this sense that our cities, our inner cities, the core of our cities are reviving, we still also have far greater growth outside. And that brings other challenges in terms of how do we share the resources that Torontonians are paying for instance, the subway system and the Toronto Transit Commission. How do we make some of those both alliances, and how do we work with other bodies, for instance in Toronto it's Metrolinx, right, around the transportation network, but also how do we think about both the city and the city within a region? And that's going to go beyond this election, and it does go beyond the election, but it's another key point that extends past the political boundaries.
Well, that was Shauna Braille, who's also a professor on the Urban Studies program at the University of Toronto, and Sean McAuliffe, the author of Toronto, City on the Verge of Greatness. Well, concluding thoughts from you, Thomas. On ballot day, who do you think is going to come out, and what difference do you think it will make to the city?
I think at the moment, Andrew, it looks as though John Tory will secure a second term. I think on paper, Jennifer Keesmaat, given just how popular she was and how popular many of her achievements as Chief City Planning Officer here were, that maybe she should have made more headway. That's not entirely her fault, given the intervention of Doug Ford and the provincial politics of Ontario. I think one issue that may come to define things is this ongoing cleavage between the city of Toronto itself and the suburbs. That's something Doug Ford wants to exacerbate and has been very successful politically for him. I don't think we're going to see this kind of huge surge of excitement ahead of Election Day. So that might well mean that John Tory does quite comfortably get a second term at City Hall here in Toronto.
Well, we look forward to coming back to you on Monocle 24 and on The Urbanist as well to hear what actually happens on the big day. But Thomas, thank you so much for joining us. That's Thomas Lewis, our man in Toronto, aided by Will Kitchens too. And that's all for this week's episode of The Urbanist. The show was produced today by Carlotta Ribello. It was researched by Will Kitchens and Alexander Tsai. And it was edited, of course, by David Stevens. Now, to play you out of this episode of The Urbanist, here's The Lapels with, you guessed it, Toronto. I'm Andrew Tuck. Goodbye, and thank you for listening, city lovers.